Roxy. There's a girl on the beach at high tide, lighting up the sea with her hands. The girls from the convent watch her from the cliff top. She's waded into the ocean up to her waist, higher. She's not even wearing a bathing suit, just jeans and a black cardigan. And she's setting the sea on fire. It's coming on to dusk, so they can see it clearly. Threads of kelp are spread in a fine, disorderly mesh across the surface of the water. And when she sends her power into the water, the particulate and debris glow dimly, and the seaweed brighter yet. The light extends in a wide circle around her, lit from beneath, like the great eye of the ocean gazing at the sky. There's a sound like popping candy as the branching limbs of the sargasso plant smoulder and the buds swell and burst. There's a marine scent, salt and green and pungent. She must be half a mile away, but they can smell it from the cliff top. They think at any moment she must have used out her power, but it goes on. The flickering luminescence in the bay. The scent, as the crabs and small fish rise to the surface of the water. The women say to one another, God will send her salvation.
She has inscribed the circle on the face of the waters, says Sister Maria Ignatia. She is at the boundary of light and darkness.
She is a sign from the Mother. They send word to Mother Eve. Someone has come. They'd given Roxy a choice of places to go. Bernie's got family in Israel. She could go to them. Think about it, Rox. Sandy beaches, fresh air. You could go to school with Yuval's kids. He's got two girls about your age, and you've got to believe the Israelis aren't locking girls up for doing what you can do. They've already got them in the army. They're already training them up, Rox. I bet they know stuff you haven't even thought of. She looks it up on the internet, though. They don't even speak English in Israel, or write with English letters. Bernie tries to explain that most people in Israel do speak English, really, but Roxy still says, nah, don't think so. Then her mum had family near the Black Sea. Bernie points it out on the map. That's your grandma comes from there. You didn't ever meet your grandma, did you? Your mum's mum? There are still cousins there, still family connections. We do good business with those people too. You could get in with the business you said you want to. But Roxy had already decided where she wanted to go. I'm not thick, she said. I know you've got to get me out the country because they're looking for who killed Primrose. It's not a holiday. And Bernie and the boys had stopped talking and just looked at her. You can't say that, Rox, said Ricky. Wherever you go, you just say you're on holiday, all right? I want to go to America, she said. I want to go to South Carolina. Look, there's that woman there, Mother Eve. She does them talks on the internet, you know? Ricky said, Sal knows some people down that way. We can fix you up somewhere to stay, Rox, someone to look after you. I don't need anyone to look after me. Ricky looked at Bernie. Bernie shrugged.
After all she's been through, said Bernie. And that settled it.
Ali sits on a rock and dabbles her fingers in the water. Every time the woman in the water discharges her power, she can feel it. Even at this distance, like a sharp smack. She says in her heart, What do you think? I've never seen anyone with this much strength in her. The voice says,
Didn't I tell you I was sending you a soldier?
Ali says in her heart, Does she know her destiny? The voice says,
Who does, sweet pea?
It's dark now, and the lights from the freeway are barely visible here. Ali dips her hand into the ocean and sends out as much charge as she can. She barely sends a flicker across the water. It's enough. The woman in the waves walks towards her. It's too dark to see her face clearly. Ali calls out, You must be cold. I have a blanket here if you want it. The woman in the water says, Bloody hell, what are you, search and rescue? Don't suppose you got a picnic there too, have you? She's British. This is unexpected. Still Still, the Almighty works in mysterious ways.
Roxy, says the woman in the water. I'm Roxy.
I'm, says Ali, and pauses. For the first time in a long while, she has the urge to tell this woman her real name. Ridiculous.
I'm Eve, she says.
Oh, my word, says Roxy. Oh, my Lord, it's only you I've blimmin' come to find, isn't it? Bloody hell, just got in this morning. Night flight, it's a killer, I'm telling you. Had a nap, thought I'd go looking for you tomorrow, and here you bloody are. It's a miracle.
See, says the voice. What did I tell you?
Roxy hauls herself up onto the flat stone next to Ali. She is suddenly and instantly impressive. She's muscular in her shoulders and arms, but it's more than that. Reaching out with that sense that she has honed and practiced, Ali tries to gauge how much power Roxy has in her skein. She feels that she is falling off the edge of the world. It goes on, as limitless as the ocean.
Oh, she says, a soldier will come.
What's that now?
Ali shakes her head.
Nothing. Something I heard once.
Roxy gives her an appraising look.
You a bit spooky, then? That's what I thought when I saw your videos. Bit spooky, I thought. You'd do well on one of them TV shows, Most Haunted. You ever seen that? Actually, you don't have anything to eat, do you? I'm starving.
Ali pats down her pockets and finds a candy bar in her jacket. Roxy tears into it, taking huge bites.
That's better, she says. You know that thing when you've used up a lot of power and it just makes you starving hungry?
She pauses, looks at Ali.
No.
Why were you doing it? The light in the water?
Roxy shrugs.
It's just an idea I had. Never been in the sea before, wanted to see what I could do.
She squints out at the ocean.
Think I killed a bloody load of fish. You could probably have dinner out of them all this week if you've got...
She juggles her hands.
I don't know, a boat and a net or something. I suppose some of them might be poison. Do you get poison fish? Or is it just like jaws and that?
Ali laughs in spite of herself. It's been a while since someone last made her laugh. Since she last laughed without deciding beforehand that laughing was the smart thing to do.
She just had an idea, says the voice. It just popped into her head. She came looking for you. I told you a soldier would come.
Yeah, says Ali. Shut up for a minute, okay?
What made you come to look for me? Says Ali.
Roxy shifts her shoulders as if she's darting and weaving, escaping imaginary blows.
I had to get out of England for a bit, and I saw you on YouTube.
She takes a breath, lets it all out, smiles at herself and then says,
Look, I don't know. All those things you talk about where you say that God's made this all happen for a reason and women are supposed to take over from men. I don't believe in any of that God stuff, all right?
All right.
But I think, like, do you know what they're teaching girls in school in England? Breathing exercises. No kidding, bleeding, breathing. Bleeding, keep it under control. Don't use it, don't do anything. Keep yourself nice and keep your arms crossed. You know what I mean? And, like, I had sex with a bloke a few weeks back, and he was practically begging me to do it to him, just a little bit. He'd seen it on the internet. No one's going to keep their arms crossed forever. My dad's all right and my brothers are all right, they're not bad, but I wanted to talk to you, because you're like, you're thinking about what it means for the future, you know? It's exciting.
It comes out of her in a big rush.
What do you think it means? Says Ali. Everything's gonna change, says Roxy, picking at the seaweed with one hand while she talks.
Stands to reason, doesn't it? We've all got to find some new way to work together on it. You know, blokes have got a thing they can do, they're strong, women have got a thing now too. And there's still guns, they don't stop working, lots of blokes with guns. I'm no match for them. I feel like... It's exciting, you know? I was saying this to my dad, the stuff we could do together.
Ali laughs.
Do you think they'll want to work with us?
Well, some of them yeah, some of them no, right? But the sensible ones will. I was talking about it with my dad. Do you ever get get that feeling when you're in a room and you can tell which girls around you got loads of power and which have got none? You know, like spider sense.
This is the first time Ali has ever heard anyone else talk about this sense. She has particularly acutely.
Yes, she says. I think I know what you mean. Bloody hell, no one knows what I mean. Not that I've talked about it with loads of people. Anyway, that. Useful to be able to tell the blokes, right? Useful to work together.
Ali flattens her lips. I see it a bit differently, you know?
Yeah, mate, I know you do. I've seen your stuff.
I think there's going to be a great battle between light and darkness, and your destiny is to fight on our side. I think you will be mightiest in the mightiest.
Roxy laughs and chucks a pebble into the sea. I always fancied having a destiny, she says. Look, can we go somewhere? Yours or somewhere? It's bloody freezing out here.
They let her come to Terry's funeral. It was a bit like Christmas. There was aunties and uncles and booze and bridge rolls and hard-boiled eggs. There was people putting an arm round her and telling her she's a good girl. And Ricky gave her some stuff before they set off, and he took some himself and went, just to take the edge off. So it felt like snow was falling, like it was cold and high up, just like Christmas. At the grounds, Barbara, Terry's mum, went to throw a trail of dirt onto the coffin. When the earth hit the wood, she made a long, wailing cry. There was a car parked and blokes with long-lens cameras taking pictures. Ricky and some of his mates scared them off. When they came back, Bernie said, perhaps. And Ricky said, could be police, working with. Roxy's in a bit of trouble over this, probably. They were all right to her at the reception, but at the grounds, none of the mourners knew where to put their faces when she walked past. At the convent, supper is already being served when Ali and Roxy arrive. There's a place saved for them at the head of the table, and there's chatter and the smell of good warm food. It's a stew with clams and mussels and potatoes and corn. There's crusty bread and apples. Roxy has a feeling she can't quite name, can't really place. It makes her a little bit soft inside, a bit teary. One of the girls finds her a change of clothes, a warm knitted jumper and a pair of sweatpants all warm and cosy from being washed so often. And that's just how she feels, too. The girls all want to chat to her. They've never heard an accent like hers, and they make her say water and banana. There's so much talking. Roxy always thought she was a bit of a blabbermouth, but this is something else. After supper, Mother Eve gives a little lesson in the scripture. They're finding scripture that works for them, rewriting the bits that don't. Mother Eve speaks on the story of the Book of Ruth. She reads out the passage where Ruth tells her mother-in-law, her friend, don't tell me to leave you. Whither thou goest, I shall go. Your people shall be my people. Your God will be my God. Mother Eve is easy amongst these women, in a way Roxy finds difficult. She's not used to the company of girls. It's been boys in Bernie's family and boys in Bernie's gang, and her mum was always more of a man's woman, and the girls at school never treated Roxy nice. Mother Eve's not awkward like Roxy here. She holds the hands of two of the girls sitting next to her and speaks softly and with humour. She says, that story about Ruth, that's the most beautiful story of friendship in the whole of the Bible. No one was ever more faithful than Ruth. No one ever expressed the bonds of friendship better. There are tears in her eyes as she speaks, and the girls around the table are already moved. It's not for us to worry about the men, she says. Let them please themselves, as they always have. If they want to war with each other and to wander, let them go. We have each other. Where you go, I will go. Your people will be my people, my sisters. And they say, amen. Upstairs, they've made a bed up for Roxy. It's just a little room, a single bed with a hand-stitched quilt across it,
A table and chair, a view of the ocean. She wants to weep when they open the door. But she doesn't show it. She remembers quite suddenly, as she sits on the bed and feels the coverlet under her hand, a night when her dad brought her back to his house, the house he lived in with Barbara and with Roxy's brothers. It was late at night, and her mum was ill with vomiting, and she'd called Bernie to pick up Roxy, and he'd come. She was in her pyjamas. She can't have been more than 5 or 6. She remembers Barbara saying,
"Well, she can't stay here."
And Bernie going, "For fuck's sake, just put her in the guest room." And Barbara crossing her arms across her bosom and going, "I told you, she's not staying here. Send her to your brother's if you have to." It was raining that night, and her dad carried her back out to the car, the drops falling past the hood of her dressing gown to fall on her chest. There's someone expecting Roxy this evening, sort of. Someone will catch her in the neck if they've lost her anyway. But she's 16, and one text will sort that out. Mother Eve closes the door, so it's just the two of them in the little room. She sits on the chair and says, "You can stay as long as you like."
"Why?"
"I've got a good feeling about you." Roxy laughs. "Would you have a good feeling about me if I was a boy?" "But you're not a boy."
"Do you have a good feeling about all women?"
Mother Eve shakes her head. "Not this good. Do you want to stay?"
"Yeah," says Roxy. "For a bit anyway. See what you're up to here. I like your,
She searches for the word.
"I like how it feels here."
Mother Eve says, "You're strong, aren't you? Strong as anyone."
"Stronger than anyone, mate. Is that why you like me?"
"We can use someone strong."
"Yeah? You got big plans?"
Mother Eve leans forward, puts her hands on her knees. "I want to save the women," she says.
"What, all of them?"
Roxy laughs. "Yes," says Mother Eve, "if I can. I want to reach them and tell them that there are new ways to live now, that we can band together, that we can let men go their own way, that we don't need to stick to the old order. We can make a new path."
"Oh, yeah. You do need a few blokes to make babies, you know."
Mother Eve smiles. "All things are possible with God's help." Ali's phone beeps. She looks at it, makes a face, turns it over so she can't see the screen.
"What's up?"
says Roxy. "People keep emailing the convent."
"Trying to get you out of here?"
"Nice place.
I can see why they'd want it back."
"Trying to give us money."
Roxy laughs. "What's the problem? Got too much?"
Ali looks at Roxy thoughtfully for a moment. "Only Sister Maria Ignatia has a bank account, and I..." She runs her tongue over her top front teeth, makes her lips click. Roxy says, "You don't trust no one, do you?" Ali smiles. "Do you?"
"Price of doing business, mate. Gotta trust someone or you'll get nothing done. You need a bank account? How many do you want? Want some out of the country? Cayman Islands is good, I think. Don't know why."
"Wait, what do you mean?" But before Ali can stop her, Roxy's taken out her phone, snapped a picture of Ali and is sending a text. Roxy grins.
"Trust me. Gotta find some way to pay my rent, don't I?"
A man arrives at the convent before 7 o'clock the next morning. He drives up to the front gate and just waits there. Roxy knocks on Ali's door, drags her down the driveway in her dressing gown.
"What?
What is it?" says Ali. But she's smiling.
"Come and see." "All right, Einar," says Roxy to the man.
He's stocky, mid-40s, dark hair, wearing a pair of sunglasses on his forehead. Einar grins and nods slowly.
"You okay here, Roxanne? Bernie Monk said to look after you. Are you being looked after?"
"I'm grand, Einar," says Roxy. "Super duper. Just gonna stay with me mates here for a few weeks, I reckon. You got what I need?"
Einar laughs at her. I met you in London once, Roxanne. You were 6 years old, and you kicked me in the shins when I wouldn't buy you a milkshake while we waited for your dad.
Roxy laughs too, easily. This is simpler for her than the dinner. Ali can see it.
Should have bought me a milkshake then, shouldn't you? Come on, hand it over.
There's a bag with, clearly, some of Roxy's clothes and other things in. There's a laptop, brand new, top of the range. And there's a little zip-up case. Roxy balances it on the edge of the open car boot and unzips it.
Careful, says Ina. Rush job. Ink will still smudge if you rub it. Got that, Evie? Says Roxy. No rubbing them till they're dry.
Roxy hands her a few items from inside the case. They're passports, US ones. Driver's licenses, social security cards. All as legitimate looking as if they'd been made up by the government themselves. And all the licenses and all the passports have her photo in. Changed a bit each time. Different hair, a couple of them with glasses. And different names, to match the names on the social security cards and the licenses. But her, every time.
We did you 7, says Roxy. Half a dozen and one for luck. 7th one's UK, case you fancy it. Do you manage to get the bank accounts, Einar?
All set up, says Einar, fishing another smaller zip-up wallet out of his pocket. But no deposits over 100,000 in one day, without talking to us first, all right?
Dollars or pounds, says Roxy.
Einar winces slightly.
Dollars, he says.
Then hurriedly,
but only for the first 6 weeks. Then they take the checks off the accounts.
Fine, says Roxy. I won't kick you in the shins. This time.
Roxy and Daryl kicked around in the garden for a bit, towing at stones and picking bark off the tree. Neither of them ever even liked Terry that much. But it's weird now he's gone. Daryl went, what did it feel like? And Roxy was like, I wasn't down there when they got Terry. And Daryl went, nah, I mean when you did Primrose. What did it feel like? She felt it again. The glitter under her palm. The way his face grew warm and then cold. She sniffed. Looked at her own hand as if it could tell her the answer.
It felt good, she said. He killed my mum,
Daryl said. I wish I could do it. Roxanne Monk and Mother Eve talk a lot in the next few days. They find the things they have in common and hold them out at arm's length to admire the details. The missing mother. The place they're both used to holding, half in and half out of families.
I like how you all say sister here. I never had a sister.
I didn't either,
says Ali.
Always wanted one,
says Roxy. And they leave that there for a bit. Some of the girls in the convent want to spar with Roxy, practice their skills. She's up for it. They use the big lawn at the back of the building, leading down to the ocean. She takes them 2 or 3 at once, sidesteps them, hits them hard, confuses them till they jolt each other. They come in for supper bruised and laughing, sometimes with a tiny spiderweb scar on the wrist or ankle. They wear it proudly. There are girls as young as 11 or 12 here. They follow Roxy about like she's a pop star. She tells them to get off, go and find something else to do. But she likes it. She teaches them a special fighting trick she's worked out. Splosh a bottle of water in someone's face, stick your finger in the water as it spurts out of the bottle, electrify the whole thing. They practice it on each other on the lawn, giggling and hurling water about. Roxy sits with Ali on the porch late one afternoon, when the sun's setting red gold behind them. They're watching the kids, larking about on the lawn. Ali says,
reminds me of me, when I was 10.
Oh yeah, big family.
There's a longish pause. Roxy wonders if she's asked something she shouldn't have asked, but fuck it, she can wait.
Ali says,
children's home.
Right, says Roxy.
I know kids who come from that.
It's rough. Hard to get on your feet. You're doing all right now, though.
I look after myself, says Ali. I learned how to take care of myself.
Yeah,
I can see that.
The voice in Ali's head has been quiet these past few days. Quieter than she remembers it being in years. Something about being here, these summer days, knowing that Rox is here and she could kill anyone stone dead. Something about that has made it all go quiet.
Ali says, I was passed around a lot when I was a child. Never knew my dad, and my mom's just a little scrap of memory. Just a hat is what Ali remembers. A pale pink Sunday church hat at a daring angle, and a face underneath grinning at her, sticking her tongue out. It seems like a happy memory, from some time between long bouts of sadness or illness or both. She doesn't remember ever going to church, but there's that hat in her memory. Ali says, I think I've had 12 homes before this one, maybe 13. She passes a hand across her face, digs her fingertips into her forehead. They put me in a place once with a lady who collected China dolls. Hundreds, everywhere, staring at me from the walls in the room I slept in. She dressed me up nice, I remember that. Little pastel dresses with ribbons threaded through the hems. But she went to jail for stealing. That's how she paid for all those dolls. So I was sent on. One of the girls on the lawn pours water on another, setting it sparkling with a faint jolt. The other girl giggles. It tickles. People make what they need for themselves, says Roxy. My dad says that. If there's something you need, something you really have to have, not just want to, but have to, you'll find a way to get it. She laughs. He was talking about junkies, wasn't he? But it's more than that. Roxy looks at the girls on the lawn, at this house which is a home, more than a home. Ali smiles. If you make it, you've got to protect it. Yeah, well, I'm here now. You have more power than anyone we've ever seen, you know? Roxy looks at her hands like she's a bit impressed, a bit afraid. I'd know, she says. There's probably other people like me. Ali has a sudden intuition then, like a fairground machine with gears working and chains clanking. Someone had taken her to one when she was a little girl, put in two quarters, pulled the lever, clunk, grind, thunk. There's a fortune, printed on a small rectangle of thick, pink-edged cardboard. Ali's intuition is just like that, sudden and complete, as if there were machinery working behind her eyes that even she has no access to. Clank, thunk. The voice says, here, this is something you know now. Use it. Ali speaks quite softly. Did you kill someone? Roxy sticks her hands in her pockets and frowns. Who told you? And because she does not say, who told you that? Ali knows that she is right. The voice says, say nothing. Ali says, sometimes I just know things, like there's a voice in my head. Roxy says, bloody hell, you are spooky. Who's going to win the Grand National then? Ali says, I killed someone too. Long way away now. I was a different person. Probably deserved it if he did it. He did. They sit with that. Roxy says, companionably and as if it has nothing to do with anything, there was a bloke who stuck his hand down my pants when I was 7. Piano teacher. My mum thought it'd be nice for me to learn piano. There I was on the stool doing every good boy deserves fun, and suddenly, hand in my knickers.
Don't say anything, he goes. Just carry on playing. So I told my dad the next night when he came to take me out to the park. And bloody hell, he went mental. Screaming at my mum, how could she? She told him she didn't know, did she, or she wouldn't have let him. My dad took some of the boys round to that piano teacher's house. Ali says, what happened? Roxy laughs. They beat the shit out of him. He ended the night with one less nut than he started it, for one thing.
Really?
Yeah, of course. My dad said if he had one more pupil round that house, and he meant ever, he'd come back for the other veg and the meat too. And not to think about leaving town and starting up again somewhere else because Bernie Monk is bloody everywhere.
Roxy chuckles to herself.
Yeah, I saw him in the street once, and he ran away. Saw me, right? Turned and actually ran.
Bloody right, mate.
Ali says,
that's good. That sounds good.
She makes a little sigh. Roxy says, oh no, you don't trust them.
It's all right. You don't have to trust them, babe.
She reaches over and puts her hand on top of Ali's, and they sit there like that for a long time. After a while, Ali says, one of the girls has a dad in the police force. He telephoned her 2 days ago to tell her she can't be in this building on Friday.
Roxy laughs.
Dads, they like keeping their daughters safe. They can't keep secrets.
Will you help us? Says Ali.
What do you think is coming? Says Roxy. SWAT team?
Not so much. We're only a few girls in a convent, practicing our religion like law-abiding citizens.
I can't kill anyone else, says Roxy.
I don't think we'll have to, says Ali. I've got an idea.
They mopped up the rest of Primrose's gang after he died. Wasn't any bother. They all fell apart after he was gone. 2 weeks after Terry's funeral, Bernie called Roxy on her mobile at 5 a.m. and told her to come to a lock-up garage in Dagenham. There, he fished the big bunch of keys out of his pocket, opened it up, and showed her 2 bodies laid out, killed cold and clean and about to go into the acid, and that'd be the end of that. She looked them in the face.
That them, said Bernie.
Yeah, she said. She snaked her arm around her dad's waist. Thanks.
Anything for Margil?
He said. Big bloke, little bloke. The two who killed her mum. One of them with her mark still on his arm, livid and branching.
All done then, sweetheart?
He said. All done, Dad. He kissed her on the top of the head. They went for a walk that morning round Eastbrook End Cemetery. Slow walking, chatting, while a couple of cleaners did the necessary in the garage.
You know the day you was born was the day we got Jack Conahan, said Bernie.
Roxy does know this. Still, she likes to hear the story again.
He'd been on us for years, said Bernie. Killed Mickey's dad. You never knew him. Him and the Irish boys. We got him in the end, though. Fishing in the canal. We waited all night for him. And when he got there early, we did him. Chucked him in. That was that. When we was done and home and dry, I checked my phone. 15 messages from your mum. 15! She got into labour overnight, hadn't she?
Roxy felt her fingertips around the edges of this story. It always seemed slippery. Something fighting its way out of her grasp. She was born in the darkness and with people waiting for someone. Her dad waiting for Jack Conahan, her mum waiting for her dad, and Jack Conahan, though he never knew it, waiting for death. It's a story about the stuff that happens just exactly when you weren't expecting it. Just on that night you thought nothing was going to happen, everything happens.
I picked you up. A girl. After 3 boys, never thought I'd have a girl. And you looked me dead in the eye and whittled all down my trousers. And that's how I knew you'd be good luck.
She is good luck. Barring a few things, she's always had good luck.
How many miracles does it take? Not too many. One, two, three is plenty. Four is a great multitude, more than enough. There are 12 armed police officers advancing across the gardens at the back of the convent. It's been raining. The ground is waterlogged, and more than waterlogged. There are open taps running at both sides of the garden. The girls have run a pump to bring seawater up to the top of the steps, and it's a waterfall now, water gushing down the stone stairs. The officers aren't wearing rubber boots. They didn't know it'd be muddy like this. All they know is that a lady from the convent had come to tell them that girls were holed up in here and had been threatening and violent. So there are 12 trained men in body armour coming for them. It should be enough to finish this. The men shout out,
"Police, leave the building now, with your hands in the air."
Ali looks at Roxy. Roxy grins at her. They're waiting behind the curtains in the dining room, the one that looks out over the back gardens. Waiting until the police are all on the stone stairs leading to the terrace outside the back doors. Waiting, waiting. And there they all are. Roxy pulls the corks out from the half dozen barrels of seawater they've stored behind them. The carpet is sodden now, and the water's gushing out under the door towards the steps. They're all in one mass of water, Roxy and Ali and the police. Ali puts her hand into the water around her ankles and concentrates. Outside on the terrace and on the stairs, water is touching the skin of all the police officers, one way or another. It needs more control than Ali's ever managed before. Their fingers are on the triggers. They want to squeeze. But one by one she sends her message through the water, as fast as thought, and one by one the officers jerk like puppets. The angles of their elbows fly out, their hands unclench and go numb. One by one, they drop their guns.
"Fucking hell," says Roxy.
"Now," says Ali, and climbs up onto a chair. Roxy, the woman with more power than she knows what to do with, sends a bolt through the water, and each of the police officers starts and bucks and topples to the ground, neat as you like. It had to be only one woman doing it. A dozen convent girls couldn't have acted together so quickly without hurting each other. A soldier had to come. Roxy smiles. Upstairs, Gordy's been filming it on her cell phone. It'll be online in an hour. You don't need too many miracles before people start believing in you, and then sending you money, and offers of legal help to get yourself properly set up. Everyone's looking for some kind of answer. Today, more than ever. Mother Eve records a message to go out over the footage. She says, "I have not come to tell you to give up a single strand of your belief. I am not here to convert you, Christian, Jew, Muslim, Sikh, Hindu, Buddhist. If you are of any faith, or none at all, God does not want you to change your practice." She pauses. She knows this is not what they're expecting to hear. "God loves all of us," she says, "and she wants us to know that she has changed her garment merely. She is beyond female and male. She is beyond human understanding. But she calls your attention to that which you have forgotten. Jews, look to Miriam, not Moses, for what you can learn from her. Muslims, look to Fatima, not Muhammad. Buddhists, remember Tara, the mother of liberation. Christians, pray to Mary for your salvation. You have been taught that you are unclean, that you are not holy, that your body is impure and could never harbor the divine. You have been taught to despise everything you are and to long only to be a man. But you have been taught lies. God lies within you. God has returned to earth to teach you in the form of this new power. Do not come to me looking for answers, for you must find the answers within yourself." What can ever be more seductive
than to be asked to stay away.
What draws people nearer than being told they are unwelcome?
Already that evening there are emails. Where can I go to join with your followers? What can I do here at home? How do I set up a prayer circle for this new thing? Teach us how to pray. And there are the appeals for help. My daughter is sick. Pray for her. My mother's new husband has handcuffed her to the bed. Please send someone to rescue her.
Ali and Roxy read the emails together. Ali says, "We have to try to help." Roxy says, "You can't help them all, babe."
Ali says, "I can. With God's help, I can."
Roxy says, "Maybe you don't need to go and get all of them, to help all of them."
The police force, all across the state, gets worse after the video of what Ali and Roxy did goes up online. They felt humiliated. Of course they did. They had something to prove. There are states and countries where the police are already actively recruiting women, but that hasn't happened here yet. The force is still mostly male, and they're angry, and they're afraid, and then things happen. 23 days after the police tried to take the convent, a girl arrives at the door with a message for Mother Eve. Only Mother Eve. Please, they have to help her. She's weak with crying, and shaking, and frightened. Roxy makes her a hot sweet tea, and Ali finds her some cookies, and the girl, her name's Mez, tells them what's happened. It was 7 armed police officers patrolling their neighbourhood. Mez and her mom were walking home from the grocery store, just talking. Mez is 12 and has had the power for a few months. Her mom's had it for longer. Her little cousin woke it up in her. "They were just talking," says Mez, "just holding their grocery bags and chatting and laughing. And then suddenly, there were 6 or 7 cops saying, 'What's in the bags? Where are you going? We've had reports of a couple of women causing trouble round here. What have you got in those damn bags?'" Mez's mom didn't take it too seriously. She just laughed and said, "What are we gonna have in here? Groceries from the grocery store." And one of the cops said she was acting pretty cool for a woman walking in a dangerous area. What had she been doing? And Mez's mom just said, "Leave us alone." And they pushed her. And she hit 2 of them, just with a little tickle of power. Just a warning. And that was it for the cops. They pulled out their nightsticks and their guns and they started working. And Mez was screaming, and her mom was screaming, and there was blood all on the sidewalk, and they mashed her on her head.
"They held her down," says Mez, "and they messed her up. It was 7-on-1.
Ali listens to it all very actively, and when Mez has finished talking, she says,
"Is she alive?"
Mez nods.
"Do you know where they have taken her? Which hospital?"
Mez says,
"They didn't take her to a hospital. They've taken her to the police station."
Ali says to Roxy,
"We're going down there."
Roxy says,
"Then we have to take everyone."
There are 60 women who walk down the street together towards the police station where they're holding Mez's mom. They walk quietly but quickly, and they're filming everything. That's the word they've passed around the women in the convent. Document everything. Stream it if you can. Put it online. By the time they arrive, the police know they're coming. There are men standing outside holding rifles. Ali walks up to them. She holds her hands up, palms towards them. She says,
"We've come here peacefully. We want to see Rachel Lateef. We want to know she's receiving medical attention. We want her sent to a hospital."
The senior officer standing at the door says,
"Mrs. Lateef is being legally detained. By what power do you ask for her release?"
Ali looks to the left and to the right, along the phalanx of women she's brought with her. There are more women arriving every minute. There are maybe 250 here now. The news of what's happened has passed from door to door. There have been text messages. Women have seen it online and left their houses and come.
"The only power that matters," she says, "the common laws of humanity and God.
There is a badly injured woman in your cells. She needs to see a doctor.
Roxy can feel the power crackling in the air around her. The women here are hyped up, excited, angry. She wonders if the men can feel it too. The policemen with their rifles are nervous. Something could go bad here, very easily. The senior police officer shakes his head and says,
"We can't let you in, and your presence here is a threat to my officers."
Allie says,
"We're here peacefully. Officer, we are peaceful. We want to see Rachel Lateef. We want a doctor to treat her."
A great muttering rises up in the crowd, then falls silent, waiting. The senior officer says,
"If I let you see her, will you tell these women to go home?"
Allie says,
"Let me see her first."
Rachel Lateef, when Roxy and Allie are brought to the holding cell to see her, is barely conscious. Her hair is matted with blood, and she is lying on the cot in the cell, hardly moving, her breath a slow, painful rattle. Roxy says,
"Jesus Christ."
Allie says,
"Officer, this woman must be taken to a hospital immediately."
The other policemen are watching the senior officer. More and more women are arriving outside the building every minute. The sound of them outside is like a crowd of murmuring birds, each one speaking to her neighbor, each ready to wheel at a secret signal. There are only 20 officers in this station. There'll be several hundred women outside within one half hour. Rachel Lateef's skull is cracked open. You can see the white bone shattered and the blood bubbling from her brain. The voice says,
"They did it without provocation. You've been provoked. You could take this station. You could kill every man in it if you wanted."
Roxy takes Allie's hand, squeezes it. Roxy says,
"Officer, you don't want this to go any further. You don't want this to be the story they tell about you. Let this woman go to a hospital."
The police officer lets out a long, slow sigh. The crowd outside grows noisy when Allie reemerges, and even noisier when they hear the approaching sirens of the ambulance nosing its way through the crowd. Two women hoist Mother Eve onto their shoulders. She holds up her hand. The muttering grows silent. Mother Eve speaks through Allie's mouth and says,
"I am taking Rachel Lateef to the hospital. I will ensure she is cared for properly."
The noise again, like grass stalks blowing. It rises up and dies away. Mother Eve splays her fingers out, like the sign of the hand of Fatima. She says,
"You have done good work here, and now you can go home."
The women nod. The girls from the convent turn and walk away as one. The other women begin to follow them. Half an hour later, when Rachel Lateef is being examined in the hospital, the street outside the police station is entirely empty. In the end, there's no need for them to stay in the convent. It's nice, it overlooks the sea and it's got a certain homely feel to it. But by the time Roxy's been there 9 months, Ali's organization could have bought 100 buildings like it. And anyway, they need somewhere bigger. There are 600 women affiliated with the convent in this little town alone, and satellites springing up across the country, around the world. The more the authorities say she's illegitimate, the more the old church says she's sent by the devil, the more women are drawn to Mother Eve. If Allie had any doubt before this that she has been sent by God with a message for her people, the things that have happened here have left her in no doubt. She is here to look after the women. God has appointed her to that role, and it is not for Allie to deny it. It's spring come round again when they're talking about new buildings. Roxy says,
"You'll save a room for me, won't you, wherever you end up?"
Allie says,
"Don't go.
Why would you go? Why back to England? What's there for you?
Roxy says.
My dad reckons it's all blown over. No one cares what we do to each other, really, as long as we don't get any honest citizens involved.
She grins.
But really?
Ally flattens her lips.
Really, why would you go home? This is your home. Stay here.
Please, stay with us.
Roxy squeezes Ally's hand.
Mate,
she says,
I miss my family. I miss my dad. And like, Marmite. I miss all that stuff. I'm not going away forever. We'll see each other again.
Ally breathes in through her nose. There is a murmuring at the back of her mind that has been quiet and far away for months now. She shakes her head. She says,
you can't trust them, though.
Roxy laughs.
What, men? All men? Can't trust any of them?
Ally says,
be careful. Find women you trust to work with you.
Roxy says,
yeah, we've talked about this, babe.
You have to take it all, says Ally. You can. You've got it. Don't let Ricky take it. Don't let Daryl take it. It's yours.
Roxy says,
you know, I think you're right. But I can't take it all sitting here, can I?
She swallows. I've booked a ticket. I'll leave a week on Saturday. There's stuff I wanted to talk about with you before that. Plans.
Can we talk about plans? Without you going on about how I should just stay?
We can. Ally says in her heart.
I don't want her to go. Can we stop that happening?
The voice says to Ally.
Remember, sweetheart, the only way you're safe is if you own the place.
Ally says,
can I own the whole world?
The voice says, very quietly, just as it used to speak many years ago.
Oh, honey. Oh, baby girl. You can't get there from here.
Roxy says,
the thing is, I've got an idea.
Ally says,
so do I.
They look at each other
and smile.